Chairman, how involved are we in this subject, Theosophia, in the New Age? Two words meaning divine wisdom, or the wisdom of God, if you like. Do we fully appreciate the tremendous ideals that we speak of in Theosophy? Now, as we think of the New Age, let's think afresh of what it is we're trying to set out to achieve. I feel at times we can be pretty coldly critical as we discuss some of the great truths of Theosophy. To tread this path, many are convinced that this is the highest calling we can be invited to take part in. The aims and objects of the society are high, lofty, and of supreme importance to the future of mankind. Too often, I would suggest, we tend to present, I think, Theosophy as an explanation for many of life's phenomena and problems, rather than as a highly spiritual and meaningful way of life. I'm not saying the former isn't important. I wonder at times whether the emphasis is in the right place, or perhaps the priority. And if we look at the three objects of our society, each and every part of these objects are spiritual in nature. Philosophy, science, and religion are rapidly coming together. And as we heard on Saturday, it's been suggested that the terminology of the third object be possibly changed to be to explore the unexplained laws of nature and the powers latent and unfolding in man for the betterment of mankind. In other words, the powers for good that are in mankind. And of course, there's no need for me to say that the first object inspires us surely to the highest of thought. Well, what can Theosophy and what does it do? Well, I'll just mention one of two things. It can give, of course, to life a new meaning and purpose. It's a transforming power, I'm sure you will agree. It's helped thousands of people of many different faiths. It's helped thousands of people of no faith at all. To those who stuck to their own religion, Theosophy can bring better understanding of that religion, a wider hope and a glorious vision. To those who've lost faith in a religion, these people find that Theosophy can restore that faith in a better form, certainly a better form than blind belief, because Theosophy teaches many of the mighty truths that form part of all religions. One could go on and on, of course. But I very much like a phrase that's been used very often by the former General Secretary, Mr. Brian Dunningham. I've often heard him say, "He's a man on fire for Theosophy," or "She's a woman on fire for Theosophy," and I think that that expresses a zeal that I feel that I lack. I'd like to refer to two further points. Now, first, let's try and use what talents we have, no matter how small or insignificant or impressive, to help the movement in what way we can. Some may have abilities in organization, some in administration, some in lecturing, some in running drawing groups of various kinds, shorthand typing, whatever it is. Don't put yourself down. Everyone has a contribution to make. If it's lecturing, I'd just like to refer to this for a moment because we had a marathon session the other night. I don't think, surely, we can all be perfect lecturers, but there are many qualities that make up a good lecturer, and I would suggest that if you've got one of them, only one of them, you think about it. Some may have the ability to explain points clearly, others speaking with conviction, others good at arranging material in an interesting way, others knowing what they want to say and saying it. We do need more lecturers. And the last point concerns something that my wife, Julia, and I have thought about for quite some little time since being theosophists, and I feel, well, it refers to the society's attitude to children. Now, in the society in New Zealand, we have the accumulated and invaluable knowledge and experience of our older members. We have a very concerned middle-aged group who are anxious to learn more and communicate more effectively. We have a smallish but slowly growing group of young people who are making their presence felt, and the future surely depends on them and on this other group, our children. What is the society doing about children, particularly in the 10 to 15 age group? Children who respond to theosophical thought. Now, I'm not saying that theosophical parents should ram theosophy down their throats and indoctrinate them. Of course not. And also, we have to be careful to train our children to be reasonably discreet about what they repeat. But I am saying that when questions are asked by children, parents' knowledge should be supplemented by a good sample of, or a good organization of children's books. Now, I know there are some. I know there are quite a number available, but I would suggest that, generally speaking, they're very limited in their subject matter and suitable mainly for children 5 to 10. We need, for the 10 to 15-year-old age group, explanations of the major theosophical concepts in their own language. I don't believe that parents' knowledge is enough. I feel that we need support in this. After all, Sunday schools and our Orthodox churches use yards and yards of material to back up their message. We can't afford to sit back on our laurels on this one, I feel. Interest in theosophy is growing. We can't ignore the importance of our children who want and respond to theosophical teachings, and many are responding at quite a young age, so that they can receive the opportunity earlier than many others have done. We could have a wealth of future new members coming in from our own theosophical families if we pay more heed to this one. Children, as you know, are very receptive. They talk about these things, and many things, of course, in a natural, uninhibited way. They're wonderful ambassadors. They are some of our future members, as well as those who join in later life. So once again, if I could just recap those three points very briefly, as we look at Theosophia in the New Age, let's look afresh at our high and spiritual aims. Let's use what talents we have, no matter how small or large, in a practical way, as we look to the second century. And let's look at the future membership we have in our own families. There's much work to be done. Let's get on with it.
Thank you, David. No wonder Gisborne Lodge is very sorry that you have now moved to Invercargill. I'm sorry to mention it, Jimmy. I think, however, he spoke very clearly, but he seemed to be a little confused on one point. He spoke of a middle-aged group and then a slowly growing young group. I think what he meant was the slowly growing middle-aged group. Lodge, if she, the president of Wellington Lodge, if she will speak.
Is the time on the table? Or is it coming
up? No, it's not coming up, sorry.
Well, friends, ever since Neil told me that I was to take part in this symposium, I've been praying for some sort of prophetic vision to find in me the feeling of the new age and to show me what direction we have to take in this new age. But I'm sorry, and with apologies to Bertha, I'm afraid I'm probably not going to produce any new ideas. Anyway, so I see it. We can only try to evaluate the future by reading the signs and portents of the present. And really, we have to admit that the changes and discoveries that have occurred over the past 100 years have been greater and more rapid than anything that has occurred in the previous centuries. We live in a very different world from that in which the society was founded 100 years ago. Then, of course, the TS was the forerunner, the precursor, and practically the sole purveyor of the ancient wisdom in the West. Now we see a real burgeoning of different groups of cult societies who are following basically the same path, although of course they present the ancient wisdom in possibly a different manner from ourselves. As I see it, these are all forces for good with whom we can cooperate. And then at the same time, it hardly needs to be said that the great upsurge in violence and the worst forms of materialism are occurring on an equal footing with, it's as though that we're just involved in a struggle between two great cosmic forces, which at the moment are terribly potent and accelerating. It's really two mighty forces being pitted against each other, and whether we're aware of it or not, we're being caught up in this struggle and this acceleration of events. And so we have to see how we can fit ourselves to present theosophy in these circumstances. And the whole mental climate is changing with such rapidity that I have to admit it's jolly difficult to keep up with it. We have to be aware of so much that's going on if we're to be effective. And as John Coates has stressed in his lecture to the Varanasi Convention, which was reprinted in the Theosophist, we just have to be open to change. We have to be aware of what's taking place in the world, especially in the attitudes of thinking of young people, so that we can present theosophy in such a way as to get through to the people of our day. Obviously, the ancient truths do not change, but the presentation must. And of course, I know this is extremely difficult, but we have to try somehow to do this if we're not to be left behind. We really have too much to offer not to adapt ourselves to the changes that are taking place and the different mental attitudes and the mental climate. Of course, in so many spheres, especially as regards material presentation, there's a wonderful job being done. You've only to see what we have to offer over in the book depot among the new press books and the films that are being given to us, and the type of advertising material being used. I think Section is doing a wonderful job in this respect. However, at the same time, we ourselves have to reflect these changes in ourselves. It's not only the material presentation. Theosophy, the Theosophical Society in the New Age, is us. And therefore, we have to work on us, on the lines that have been shown by Geoffrey Hodgson, for example, in the spiritual development. This acceleration has to be met by an acceleration in ourselves. We have to be intense in what we're doing, in training ourselves, preparing ourselves for this work, because the spirit can't flow through us if we don't allow it to, if we don't open ourselves up to it. And as Geoffrey said last night, it's a razor-edged path. In fact, it's jolly well strewn with broken bottles, you might say. And the struggle is tremendous. But this is the challenge that we have to accept. We have to change ourselves and train ourselves. And if we want to know how to do this, we've got to be aware every minute. For any new members who might want direction in this, as well as what's been given in detail, there's a jolly good book, Studies, Talks on the Path of Occultism, Volume 1, which is on the feet of the feet of the Master, which goes into that in depth. We have to purify our minds. In other words, that means we have to be aware of every thought. We mustn't let our egos get the better of us. We don't take offence. We have to be people who don't take offence at what is said to us. At the same time, we have to be very careful and delicate in trying to not to offend other people. Young people have a natural understanding of how to give themselves. This is what we do, I think. We have to give ourselves, we have to open ourselves up. Be open in mind and in heart. This is so important. And to be able to give ourselves. And I was at a group, house party the other evening, just a few of us, and a young Canadian friend of mine who's passing through Wellington was present. She's 27 years old, not so very young perhaps, and also a much younger lad of 16. And when she was saying, we have to know how to give ourselves, this lad said, well, what do you mean by giving ourselves? So she said, well, give me your hand. And he timidly gave her his hand. And she said, yes, you're giving me 5% of yourself. Now she said, I'll give you my hand. And you could see immediately what she meant. She gave herself 100% and warmth and outgoing and so on. So we do have to be outgoing people if we want to present philosophy so that we can communicate, so that we can get through to people. And this means being open to the other groups who are doing the same things as ourselves. It's so important. I think Jeffrey mentioned a little of it, that we have to see them as brothers and have every bit of goodwill we can, because the forces of evil against us are just so great and so strong that every little bit of good we can muster in this challenge, this battle, must be used. So we see these kindred groups, whoever they are, and they're beautiful people, many of them. I like to go along to other groups to see what's going on, to see what they're thinking, to see what they're doing. And you can only be impressed by the beautiful openness and gentleness of people, and the way in which they are going out and want to go to other groups. I've heard one Swami telling his group that you must go out wherever, in whatever centre you are, to any of the other kindred groups, and have this exchange, so that we can really feel we're all one. I don't mean that we should lose our identity. The Theosophical Society has its own character and its own identity and its own way of giving things and presenting things. We have to steer the middle path in all these things so that we remain aware of what we have to give and what we have to do, and at the same time try and go forth in brotherhood and love to these other groups who are doing so much. We're no longer the precursors as we once were. We were the forerunners, but we're no longer so. We are one of many groups doing our own thing in our own way. Well, I've got a whole lot of notes here that don't seem to have used much, but anyway. Another point I did want to stress is that youth does want help and guidance. We have to be aware that they want our help, but we have to do it so that we can help them. We can't thrust ourselves on them. And we can learn from them if we're open. We can learn from them. It's an exchange. We can help them, but we can also learn from them if we're open to them. And so many young people are really, they're just extremely idealistic. They go on to drugs and the rest of it, and promiscuity and so on, simply because they're so jolly lost. They're so disillusioned with the world as they see it, and who can blame them? And I've seen many of these occult groups who have got young people off drugs and got them onto a really constructive way of life, a creative way of life, where they're helping other people and serving and giving themselves. And I don't know, I'm afraid that's all rather disjointed, but those are a few thoughts for theosophy in the New Age, to be aware of and terribly open on another point to I know that you have to do an awful lot of reading, and it seems as though we haven't got enough hours in the day, but one movement, one thing that sprung up in the last few years is the ecology. And I know that Brian's been doing some good work in this direction, but ecology is so close to the theosophical thinking of the unity of life. And that's a movement in which we can become involved, and through that put forward our own ideas on theosophy, rather covertly, perhaps not too overtly sometimes, and just feeling our way along. But that's a movement that we can use, so that all these things in the New Age, there are just so many fields into which we can go. So that's about all I have to say. I think it's time to go away.
Well, I certainly hope not to be too disappointing after that sort of introduction. Theosophy and the New Age. Now, I have certainly no grand or great prophetic vision of the New Age and Theosophy, but I feel that Theosophy has certainly come a long way to presenting the objects of the society, and I'd be prepared to say that I think the objects are well and truly on the way to being generally accepted throughout the world, the thinking world, those who are interested in the general upgrading and the improvement of man's spiritual lot, as it were. I can see that the duality of man, this I think will become quite a fact, that man is spirit and is also physical. Science is getting well and truly into this area. Ethical government. We've seen the painful effects of America with their problems in government. But this has also opened the Western world up, wherefore or whereby no one now really can get away from the inquiring minds of reporters and inquirers who seek the truth. And it has made many governments, particularly Western governments, look to their laurels as to who they are and what they are and what they stand for. The sharing of resources. Well, this is going to become quite obvious because of the fact that everything is running out and will run out. So therefore, we're going to have to pool resources and through sheer necessity, brotherhood must develop in this area. The unity of all life. Well, once again, this is well and truly being brought and well-founded in science, with recent books on the subject of plants and even lower forms of life having intelligence. There are many, many more, so I don't think we really need to go too far there. Our chairman has spoken of the work perhaps that HPB is doing, but before we actually get to this sort of presentation, I'd like to just remind us that Mr. Geoffrey Hodgson has given us some tremendous things to think about regarding our own personal attitude to theosophy and to spiritual development. Obviously, with all great reverent respect to Mr. Hodgson, he is not going to be with us forever, and although he is one of the most remarkable and profound spiritual leaders that we have and the world has, somehow we're going to have to carry on the work that he has done and many others are doing and have done in the past. So obviously we've got to train people, we've got to train ourselves. I don't really believe that through individuals sitting away quietly and doing their own work and concentrating on themselves and trying to upgrade their own spiritual development to take over this sort of work is entirely the answer. The need is too great, things are moving too fast, and training, spiritual training. I don't really mean the blind leading the blind, as perhaps we might be doing up in Auckland with the need that we have up there for lecturers and teachers, but I mean that we're going to have spiritual training schools with specific instruction on how to teach others the art of spirituality. Now, that's about all what I can say about this, because I'm very much an infant in this area myself. New Zealand, we have a quality here, I think you may agree, that we do tend to learn greatly from overseas experience. For example, With the changeover of decimal currency, we've learnt from overseas experience, could have done that efficiently, quickly and very well. Television, I believe, even though some may disagree, we have learnt a lot from overseas on television presentation in New Zealand. We've learnt a lot from overseas by way of business management organisation. But we seem to have, I seem to have learnt at this convention, that we have a rather peculiar phenomenon, or a remarkable phenomenon, in New Zealand here, that our overseas visitors come back and they tell us that we are more advanced than America, say, in our presentation of Theosophy. And I find this rather a contradiction in terms, because we've learned so much from overseas, we've learned all our Theosophy basically from overseas, and now it looks as though we might have the thin edge of the wedge. Why this is, I'm not quite sure, and I've been thinking about it to quite a degree, because when we look at other organisations, other spiritual organisations in New Zealand, I mean large for church groups, who seem to be very well advanced with organisation, they have training schools and schemes, and they take people in, they go through a system, as it were, and certain individuals with certain talents are sorted out, as our very first speaker has given us, the need for specialisation. They're doing this, and they're getting the right sort of people in the right jobs, and they're putting them through classes and schools, and that they seem to have the machinery to do this. So I say to myself, perhaps we can do this too, or we should be able to do this. It's not apparently happening overseas to any great extent in the Theosophical movement. So I feel that although we are perhaps ahead by that much or that much, I'm not quite sure about Theosophical Brothers overseas, I feel we should not become complacent about this, because there's just so much work to be done, particularly in the organisational side. And the development and training of people is, I believe, our immediate problem for the new age. Thank you very much.
Once described the work of the Theosophical Society as that of ploughing up the hard crusts of the world's mind so that new seeds of thought might grow and old plants of truth might flourish once more. And I think it may be truly said that the Society has, during the last 100 years, done this work in a very wonderful way. It has released again in the world all the old teachings of the brotherhood of man, the unity of life, the evolution of the soul, the immortality of the soul, reincarnation and karma, and all of the others which we all know so well. This may seem an incredible statement to make, to say that a few hundred Theosophical people could have, a few hundred thousand, could have done such a great work. But it is undoubtedly true that because of the work of the Theosophical Society, people all over the world are now able to accept ideas that a century ago aroused the utmost antagonism. And even during the last 35 years that I have been a member of the Society, I find that Theosophical ideas are much more acceptable now than they were even when I joined. So it does show, really, that a very splendid work has been done. Now we have come to the end of the first century, and we are thinking of the work which we will need to do during the coming years if we are to remain a viable and living force in the world. I think, of course, that we must continue the work that we have been doing, and that is the teaching of the truths of the ancient wisdom. But I think that we will have to do it at much deeper levels and also in many different ways. We have heard a good deal this morning from the former speakers, and I think they have stressed very necessary things. First of all, the work for children, little children and middle-aged and teenagers. The other day when I was playing outside with my smallest grandson, aged 5, quite suddenly he looked at me and he said, "Grandma, how come Jesus died to save the world?" And you know, I was very glad that something attracted his attention and he ran off to play. I have talked to him quite a lot about God and so forth and so on, but I really felt that I was absolutely floored by it, and I have been thinking of it a great deal. But there are many other different ways, some of which we are now using, such as films and tapes and so forth and so on. We have only to look at the state of the world to realize that this is true. And it is for the state of the world that we must look to assess our future usefulness. And yes, there is one other way which I think we should work, very importantly, in the development of compassionate thought, compassionate movements. Our vegetarian society, work for the elimination of cruelty. There is nothing which stands in the way of the birth of the new sub-race, so much as the cruelty that is in the world today and the coarseness, really, that prevents the development of the sensitive natures of the children who are to form the new sub-race. I think that is most important, the development of compassionate thought, in whatever way you like to do it. We are all familiar with the idea that in the last quarter of every century, a special effort is made by the Great Brotherhood to help forward the spiritual progress of mankind. These efforts are so real that they can be followed back through history, century after century, and they may be very illuminating and inspiring study. The work of the Theosophical Society was a part of the special effort that was made during the last century. That was the work of bringing the ancient wisdom once more to mankind, particularly in the West. The effort of the coming century is said to be not only a continuation of this work, but the spread of what is known as esotericism, or the inner side of the wisdom teaching, which means that what has been hidden so far in this century will be made available to mankind in the coming years. We are all aware that today there is a tremendous occult explosion in the world. People are desperately seeking some kind of a spiritual life. New leads, new goals. Therefore, every new teaching, every new method of yoga or meditation, mind control, every psychic movement is assured of a following, whether it is motivated by altruism, which many of them are, or by a love of power, or by a desire for profit. All of them are assured of a following. It does show, I think, that there is a deep interest in the occult and a longing for esotericism in the world. A longing that has been made possible by the opening up of the world mind to accept new ideas and teachings about religion and of spiritual life and all the truths of the ancient wisdom. In what way a leave will be given in answer to this longing, what form the new ethic will take, we cannot know, except that if it follows the pattern of the past, the people who are to lead it are already trained. They know their work, and that work has already begun. But whatever happens, the Theosophical Society can and must play a tremendous part in this new work. We have in our possession great knowledge and many keys which can open the way to the spiritual life in a safe and sure manner, and so help mankind to avoid many of the pitfalls that can result from the awakening of new forces and the deeper levels of consciousness in his nature. I don't know whether you have ever realized it, but perhaps there is nowhere in the world so much knowledge about the truly sane, safe, reliable methods of developing our spiritual nature. And when you hear of the risks and the practices to which some people resort through ignorance, it makes you think if only we could show them the stability and the wonder really of our theosophical teachings. But we in the society, I think, also have many shortcomings, and I think we should really look at ourselves and assess our strengths and weaknesses before we can take a part in this new work. We have always professed, as Brother Tiny has said in his article in Centenary Magazine, we have always professed to be a spiritual movement, and yet when people have come into the society, they have found that for the most part, our behavior and conduct is not very different from that which they find outside. The true teachers must translate spiritual ideals into spiritual life, and the true way of teaching is, of course, by example. So we also must work to spiritualize our lives if we are to become a powerful influence in the coming century. If we can do this, then in the coming years there will be more and more spiritually mature men and women in the society whose brotherliness and wisdom and love are based not on theory, but on a direct realization of the unity of all the life and the supreme reality seated in the hearts of all beings. And so if we can do this then, brothers, the society will be in a position to teach others with the authority and the example of illumined lives. Another aspect of the future work of the Theosophical Society, I feel, must be a much deeper study and knowledge and understanding of the divine wisdom by all of its members. We are inclined to leave much of that to the few. We think they're wonderful and we appreciate them, and we ourselves are lazy on this point. Theosophists should be the most well-instructed and knowledgeable people in the world when it comes to the truths of the ancient wisdom. It should be our life, our influence to do this, to obtain this knowledge. H.T.B. once said that the secret doctrine which he wrote in such close collaboration with the great masters was written for future generations. Now, what did she mean by this? I think that she meant that we have to develop in ourselves the capacity to understand not only the secret doctrine, but a great deal more of our most precious and deeply philosophical literature. It is a part of our training to develop in ourselves the capacity to understand. Whenever you can look down and say, that's beyond me, I can't possibly understand that, think to yourself, I have within me the capacity to understand this book, this knowledge, and all I have to do is to develop it. And it is a form of meditation. It's proved, I think, even in small ways, when we first come into the society, we read all kinds of books. 2 years later, we can read them again without even recognizing them. And later than that, they really become a mine of information that we haven't even recognized because we have developed our philosophical sense. This is important, brothers, to all of you, particularly those who have just come into the society. The Master Moria, in a letter to Mr. Sinnett, once advised him to develop his metaphysical intuitions, by which, as I understand it, he meant not the mind or the intellect, very wonderful instruments, but with absolutely no answers, as we can see in the world today. I think he meant the spiritual intelligence, which is an aspect of our higher nature, responsive to Buddha, the intuition. It is this spiritual intelligence which will solve some of the world's present problems by direct insight. See the answers. Future generations of Theosophists will need to develop this aspect of their consciousness, and as they do it, they will not only be able to present the divine wisdom in all its grandeur and splendor, but also attract towards its study some of the world's finest human beings, and so become a leader in world thought. One last thought. H.T.B. defines Theosophy as pure altruism, by which he meant absolutely selfless service. I have heard the idea expressed, and sometimes from among our members, that the inner development, that to seek the pathway of inner development, was little more than selfishness, a putting of our personal progress before the outer work of society. But I see the inner and the outer work as one. One cannot stand up really without the other. Let me express it to you in the words of Light on the Path. You remember where it says, desire only that which is within you, because within you is the light of the world, the only light that can be shed upon the path. If you cannot find it within you, then it is useless to look for it elsewhere. And it says also, desire only that which is beyond you. It is beyond you because when you have found it, you will have lost yourself. And the most wonderful expression or description of pure altruism. When you have found it, you will have lost yourself. And it says again, hunger for such possessions as can be held by the pure soul, that you may accumulate wealth for that united spirit of life, which is your only true self.
Also of Wellington Lodge, and another person whom I hope we will be able to encourage to speak far more often from our platform, Mr. Alan Mackie.
Mr. Chairman and fellow members, it's fairly inevitable, you know, that when the last man in is asked to bat, he's pretty likely to play some shots that bear a fairly close resemblance, at least, to some of the stars on the side. But he's not expected to play them perhaps with quite the same finesse that they did. And so if I'm repetitive, I hope that you will forgive me because I am the last man in. Because I've noticed a new problem we have too, that the last man to bat has a kind of empathy, or is given a kind of empathy by those on the terraces. They don't expect him to perform very well, but they like to see what he's going to fish out of the bag. And if he makes a shot or two that by some luck or mischance, or no, there's no such word as mischance, is there? That by some luck comes off, well, he gets a rousing reception for it. Geoffrey Hobson quoted the statement during the last 2 days, and I can't remember exactly when he said it, but I think he might have said it twice, that Theosophia must be popularized. I believe that for very many reasons, that popularization is at the point of liftoff, to use a modern space flight term. Now, I'd like to share with you some of my reasons for believing that this is so. In modern educational theory, at least, there's a belief that there is a point of readiness for learning, and that unless the recipient is ready, all the talk and all the hammering and all the browbeating in the world will do him little good, and he will be able to receive or absorb little of the message you want to put across. I believe that mankind is rapidly approaching, and many already have reached that moment of readiness to learn, readiness to receive. Let me first explain the meaning I give to popularization. I don't mean anything to do with the modern pop cult. Now, that is something to do with the same idea. But the Latin word populus means the people. And I take the English word popularization to mean making Theosophia a part of the understanding of the people. And by the people, I mean the people of the world, not merely those who belong to our Western civilization, and not even just those within that group who happen to be followers of Jesus Christ. By the word people, I mean the people of all cultures and all creeds, and I know that's how you see it too, but it's good for us to define just what we mean by then popularization and the people. In the first 100 years of the existence of the TS Society, seemed to me to have been a period when, first, the society has had time to establish itself and to get organized, to prepare, in other words, for a notably important task. And second, the last 100 years have brought mankind, in my belief, to the culmination of, or very close to the culmination of, a series of cultural, social, ethical, political, almost any kind of change, even you might call it revolution. Many men and women, so it seems to me, are, or soon will be, ready to accept the philosophy that is theosophy, and over the next 100 years will want to be told, as Jean Cronfeld has said, clearly and expertly, well, about the meanings of theosophy. In the next few minutes, it would be impossible to explain in detail all the changes that I mentioned above, but some are important enough for me to want to endeavour to give you the thread of my argument. And I was talking about cultural, social, educational, ethical, etc. changes. Until fairly recently, the so-called Western civilization was directed by the Church. Indeed, it is to the Church that we owe what mores remain in our society. And I'm talking of society at large. The Church organized and directed education, the early development of what we call modern science, politics, and even would go so far as to going to war to achieve its ends. It was the patron of the arts, the fine arts, music, architecture, and literature, and it even directed economics and all those concomitant ideas of property ownership and values of the economic system. In short, medieval man's whole life, including his morals and his ethics, were ordered by the Church. However, from the 16th century onwards until today, the Renaissance, with its breakaway religions leaving the Pope's authority, the Industrial Revolution, which broke up village life, sent the poorer people off to the cities looking for jobs, broke up village life, and all that meant as a sheet anchor in their lives. The same Industrial Revolution which produced a new class of businessmen and property owners and manufacturers. Darwin's theory of evolution and its challenge to the very heart of the belief in creation. The growth of mass education provided by the state out of taxation, a state education system that had to be free, secular and compulsory. By all these changes, by all these revolutions since the 16th century, the power and the authority of the Church and of Orthodox religion have been whittled away. Now men, women and children, many of them, can challenge the old authority with a degree of impunity, or can ignore them without consequence, unless they happen to have a conscience. And what is more important, and this is where I think the society comes in, man is in doubt about what it is good to believe. That is one of the reasons why we have our drug culture. So many young people and older people, let us all share, are hunting for something that has meaning, has verity, has some sort of satisfaction to them personally. They cannot find it. They go on experimenting and they get caught up in something that's bad for them. As short a time ago as 50 years back, education was primarily the responsibility of the Church. Next to the Church came the family, as being responsible for bringing up the children in its membership. And the school came last. Church, home, and school. The Church came last in the educative process. The school came last in the educative process. Last in terms of responsibility, and last in terms of the importance of the task it had to carry out. Its requirements were simply to provide little more than the three R's. And anything to do with morals, ethics, religious belief, was left out of the response, was kicked out of the sphere of influence of the school. Now today that order is completely reversed. And it's one of the phenomena of the social changes of our time that we have not yet learned to understand or to live with. Society looks more and more to the education system. Indeed, some people vehemently demand that the school provide not merely factual learning, the 3 hours, but also cultural development, once the responsibility of the church, vocational training, once the responsibility of the family, and now even the moral and ethical principles which the family, parents, or the church cannot handle any longer. For example, there is in New Zealand a growing demand for the provision of religious studies in the schools. Now that may be an advantage to us. Orthodox religions have in the main responded to all this change and all this new pressure by becoming more orthodox, by becoming more defensive, by becoming entrenched in its older beliefs. Obedience, however, to dogmatic teaching that does not allow question and discussion, obedience that excludes the possibility that revision, renewal, and rethinking are necessary, such blind obedience is more than modern man can agree to. That is why some young people, and I believe it's many young people, and some older ones too, are interested in exploring philosophies that expound responsibilities to one another, service to one another and to mankind, to all mankind, not just the chosen few. Eminent scientists all over the world believe now that there is much more to the universe than a haphazard accidental happening. They know that only an intelligence could have ordered the universe and all it contains. Many, many scientists believe now that that intelligence not only created the universe, but continues to exist within it and within all created matter and within all creatures. Many scientists believe that now. They're unable to explain it, and that's what bothers them. And it's what switches some of them off pursuing the idea. But there are sufficient now, eminent and influential scientists who believe this, to affect the whole of the teaching of science, whether you take it in biology, or in chemistry, or in physics, or in medicine. No matter where you look, you will find amongst the skilled practitioners in that field people who believe that there is an intelligence that still motivates and animates life. Now this new understanding is rapidly reaching the young people of whom I meet so many in my daily work. And I know it firsthand that their growing interest and the energy and persistence with which they are beginning to seek a clear-cut philosophy that provides more credible answers to the questions, who am I, where do I come from, and what am I here for? Those questions are being asked over and over again in the lecture halls and classrooms of the country. And there is an acknowledgement, both amongst them and amongst scientists too, that there is some spiritual existence which, so far, modern education has not acknowledged, but which inevitably it must. The very questions they are asking, I believe, we all believe, Theosophia can help them to answer. Provided then that Theosophists continue to build upon the foundations the society has laid in its first 100 years, in my view it is inevitable that the next 100 years, will see Theosophia become a guiding force in the lives of multitudes of people on this earth. To return to the beginning I made, there is, in my view, a popular demand. It behoves this society to satisfy by making Theosophia readily available or popularized. Thank you all for not barracking from materialists.
Thank you very much. Just before opening the subject for discussion by the members, perhaps I could mention that this afternoon will be another jam session, which will be led by David England, who will be chairing the activity. Shortly, I would think 12:15 would probably be appropriate. We will be able to hear a tape of Geoffrey Hodgson's inaugural speech to the Congress in New York. Would 12:15 be satisfactory? It's a 14-minute tape. And then we will break off for lunch. Lunch, I think, is at 1 o'clock. And, of course, this evening, I think our new General Secretary will be giving an inaugural address, followed by the film, The Universal Flame. Is there anything else you'd like to
add? 2 o'clock, the inaugural address by our General Secretary, followed by the film, The Inner Spaces of the Mind, featuring Edgar Mitchell, and then opening up to the open forum, and then tonight, the closing, and at the closing of the convention, the film, The Universal Flame.
Thank you very much. I hope everyone's quite clear on that.
I've been quite disappointed from the from the hierarchy of the Theosophical Society. First of all, I would like to say that we should wipe the three objects of the society. They were for the past 100 years. First of all, the Brotherhood of Man. No, it was to form the nucleus of the Brotherhood.